right, Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton and another episode of Disruptive Healthcare. How are you doing, Stone?
I am doing well, but I can see that our consistent guest, Lynn Hood, is eager to share with us the fantastic results from the recent...
That's right, the big SEMDA conference. Lynn, how'd that go?
It was awesome. We had, last year we broke all records and had 300 people there, 300 med tech people from across the Southeast and really across the nation. This year we had 400 people, and I personally am going to attribute it to the exposure we gave this on Business Radio X, because why else would they have come?
You do the math. 300 right. Last year without us, 400 with us.
Absolutely.
You connect the dots.
It proves. We had 20 companies present. We had 60 VCs there. We had terrific content being delivered. It was truly a knockout, and we are already starting to plan, although I am exhausted, we are already starting to plan for 2014.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And then there'll be a meeting next month at SEMDA?
We're
taking a break for a while.
Oh, gosh, I hope so. Actually, we meet quarterly with SEMDA. So SEMDA.net. Great source. You can sign up for the emails. We try not to be too obnoxious with them, but send out information about what's going on throughout the Southeast. And so sign up for the emails, SEMDA.net. We'll have a recap going out today. You get the news first here on Business. Of course, Business Radio
That's
X,
right.
News breaking.
Breaking news.
That's right. And we'll be meeting in a couple months, so I won't tell you that. I will tell you, I just had a call this morning. We're planning already for the Health IT Summit later this year. November the 12th, and looks like that's going to be another terrific one, but we don't have to talk about that for another few months.
We got a few months to go.
That's
for that.
Right. I have nothing new to promote for you. Sorry.
Well, congratulations, and that's SEMDA.net if you want to learn more and get plugged into the most important medical device community in Atlanta and the Southeast.
Thanks, guys.
Well, Mr. Stone, we've had a busy week. We were at Startup Riot earlier in the week.
That was a lot of fun. We had investors there as well. I mean, investors probably just fly in just to make their rounds.
There's a lot of action at Startup Week.
I have so much fun when you're having conversations with these people. They're so passionate about their new product or service. They're eager to promote it. They're a little anxious. They're a little nervous. Didn't you notice a distinct difference when we were interviewing people who had not presented yet, who had not pitched yet? The ones who had already pitched, by the time they came to our interview, they were so relaxed. They were so chilled
out. It was easy
out.
At that point.
But no, Sanjay and his team, they do such
do
a fantastic
great job
out
and
there.
And it was interesting. This is the first year. We've done this a few years. The first year we saw so many startups that were not from Atlanta. We had three from Chattanooga, we had one from Portland, we had one from Indiana, and we had one from Raleigh that we saw. So previously, it had been the vast majority were Atlanta-based startups. So it was interesting that this event is getting bigger and bigger.
It was a lot of fun. And this show is always a blast, and no exception this morning. This morning on Disruptive Healthcare, we're going to get a chance to visit with Kurt Tanner.
Tartar.
See, I got to bring my glasses when we do this thing. Kurt Tartar, president of A New Med, and his buddy A.B. Short. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So, A New Med, what are you guys doing for folks?
We are repackaging date-expired devices that healthcare providers would typically discard into the landfill and pay to have hauled away.
So why don't you walk us through, for the listener who doesn't understand how this happens in a hospital. Like a hospital has a bunch of stuff, devices, and they have like sponges and all kinds of stuff, right, that have expiration dates?
They do. It's true. We specialize in the high-value devices. Uh-huh. Those used in specialties such as orthopedic, laparoscopic, cardiovascular. And so when those dates expire on those devices, and typically an OEM, an original equipment manufacturer like a Medtronic or a Johnson & Johnson, will assign a two-year expiration date on a device.
Okay.
And so if it doesn't get used by the provider who paid anywhere from $100 to $3,000 for these devices,
They'll
get thrown away to the landfill. And so to prevent that from happening and to extend its useful life, because it's never been used, never been opened.
So it's still in the original packaging.
It's still in the original packaging, and we simply remove it from that original package, put it in new packaging, relabel it in accordance to FDA guidelines. We sterilize it, and then we resell it at a discount.
And then you give it a new expiration date?
We give it a new two-year expiration date.
How many times can you do that?
It depends on the device. It depends on the device. And these are clean devices that we're discussing.
Right, they've never been used.
Clean
never,
to start with, right?
Exactly, because people familiar with this value proposition now that Johnson & Johnson and Stryker have just jumped in by buying the two pioneers recently for 5x revenue, the soil side that we'll evolve into is a whole nother revenue channel for us.
So now the hospitals buy X number of devices, and they just put them in a storage, like in their, a pantry of devices in their hospital? Is that how it works? And they just divide by that date, and they just take the freshest?
You would think they'd have a LIFO, FIFO type, rotation of inventory. But these high-end devices particularly, it's very sophisticated how they do flow through the general stores after they're procured and into the central supply department or right. sterile processing department. Then they're distributed into the OR for surgery. And how sometimes they just don't get rotated properly, or these are physician preference items. Thus, if a physician leaves, the product stays, doesn't have a home for utilization.
Because one physician could like this brand.
Right, he wants the Bowflex 9000, and the next physician wants something totally different.
He doesn't like that one. He likes a different one, even though they do a similar thing.
That's correct, and that's one example of how the product stays on the shelf and doesn't get used, before its expiration date. Others are product conversions. Let's say they go from Johnson & Johnson to Covidien. Mm-hmm. Well, Covidien's not going to pick up the J&J product. J&J's product is going to sit there and maybe it's going to expire on the shelf.
Right.
Right. So what compelled you to get into this? How did you fall into it? Did you just see the absurdity of all these?
or you saw somebody like, what are you doing with that pallet of devices you're about to throw in the dumpster?
Well, I've had the pleasure of serving in the healthcare community on the supplier side my entire 34-year career.
All right.
And as a result, I had friends that worked for these two pioneers, Ascent and Sterilmed, and saw how their value proposition was being eagerly embraced in the marketplace. They were growing exponentially. And and so I said, this is an opportunity. There needs to be more than two players. Today, the market is controlled by J&J and Stryker, who bought Ascent and Sterilmed. They control 95% of the market. And it's a $4 billion market. It's only 10% penetrated today. It's projected to double in revenue in the next 3 years. This is a good time for a new med.
So you think this would be a great connection for me, because remember yesterday my knee gave out?
That's right. Do you have extra knee?
You think maybe I could get a good deal on a knee. So you brought your friend and colleague with you, A.B. Short. Let's welcome him to the conversation. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So give us a little bit of a feel for your background and what compelled you to get into this with Mr. Kurt here.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. About 15 years ago, I became aware of this surplus that Kurt just described, but focused on a wider scope of surplus than just the high-end devices, and realized that hospitals had a tremendous amount, and I like to use the word surplus instead of waste, that was coming out of their systems that they had no option for it other than landfill. But this product, again, had value in terms that it had never been exposed to patients, never been used. And so I was part of a group that created a nonprofit called MedShare here in Atlanta, and we worked with the hospitals, manufacturers, and distributors to reclaim that product, and then with the use of a lot of volunteers and paid staff, repackage it, inventory it, and then donate it overseas. So MedShare, will ship hundreds of containers, 40-foot tractor-trailer loads a year around the world to hospitals that can't afford to buy it.
And what are some of the items that you're shipping?
It's really, I would describe it in two categories. One, MedSurge, which is medical supplies that's left on what's called the back table after a case.
Okay.
It's product that they had in the OR. Worst case scenario, you don't want to run down the hall to get something as the patient's having trouble. So you have it
right.
in the room with you.
Yeah.
Well, the hospital then bills the patient or their third-party right. payer for all the product. But if it doesn't
Whether
get used,
use
exactly.
Not.
So if it doesn't get used by the patient, the hospital can't save it and use it on another patient because it's already been expensed out. So the hospital had
it's
no...
It's expensed out, but it's never used. It's
exactly.
still in the original packaging.
Exactly.
It's good as new.
Exactly. But they had no choice other than put it in the landfill. So what MedShare would do would come in and place receptacles in the ORs, work with the hospitals, and the hospitals were very willing to work with us as a nonprofit.
So you're putting your own little trash can that
exactly.
the good stuff goes into.
Exactly.
But it's smart, though. You're making it very easy for them to facilitate that.
Exactly. Exactly.
And they were probably, I know my brother-in-law used to be an OR nurse, and he would tell me all the time, he's like, we have these things that cost you know, a lot of money, and we're just throwing them in the garbage.
Exactly. So it's a win-win for the hospitals and for the nonprofit, and it's very labor-intensive. You don't sell the product as a nonprofit. You're giving it away. You do try to raise money, obviously, to cover
but
your
overhead. But you got to, like, sort it. You got to do something, too, right?
MedShare here locally uses over 1,000 volunteers a month. MedShare in California, probably about 600 or 700 a month. So I grew that industry, and it was in that industry for about 10 or 12 years, and decided to bring in new leadership. I was ready to do something different. And about the time I was walking out the door, I get this phone call from Kurt. The chamber had said he was meeting with Atlanta Chamber, and they said, you know, there's this group called MedShare. There may be some possibilities.
Right, some synergies there, right?
Exactly. So it excited me because I saw even the waste that MedShare, the surplus that MedShare had that we couldn't donate overseas, because the World Health Organization has some standards that all NGOs, non-governmental organizations, should follow. And this, and to simplify it, it basically says if you can't use the item in your own country, you shouldn't donate it overseas. There shouldn't be a double standard. And the general principle was we shouldn't ship anything, MedShare shouldn't send anything overseas that didn't have a year's shelf life still on it.
So we had some waste.
Exactly. So when Kurt comes down the line, I say, aha, here's an opportunity for a nonprofit who's generating, already has a revenue, I mean, already has a stream of product coming into its facility, some of which it can't donate overseas. Here's a business opportunity to where they can reprocess it or re-sterilize it, extend the life of it.
Extending the life, right.
And the two organizations could mutually benefit
from
this relationship. So I have my role at a new med as an outside consultant. I'm also on their board. Has been to introduce a new med to the med shares around the country. I've been part of a group to establish a national network and establish best practices for that network. So I know the players and can say, hey, here's an opportunity to do business with the new med to create a revenue stream for the nonprofit, but also create product coming back from a new med that may not be in the high-value end, but he can reprocess, extend the life of some of the low-value items that have need in the international setting.
Right.
So it really is a good
marriage.
Yeah.
What a godsend. You must have been tickled to death to get a chance to start working with this guy, huh?
Indeed. It has been a godsend. And I'll give credit to Lynn Hood. Excuse me. Lynn connected me to MedShare at the Health IT Summit that Mac was putting on a couple of years ago. And so thanks to Lynn, here we sit today.
So now, what do you guys got going forward?
Well, continuing to expand AB's relationships with these medical surplus recovery organizations to bring in greater supply of what we call raw material, these date-expired devices, and just to continue then the reprocessing and pushing the product into the marketplace with different sales channels. And our goal is to grow a $10 million company within the next few years. And with that, the good news for our local economy is that it creates several jobs. This is a very labor-intense, non-automated business where people physically take the product out of their current packaging, put it in new packaging, apply a new label, send it off to sterilization. You can look at Ascent and SteroMed's website before they were acquired by Johnson & Johnson and Stryker. When they were both at $100 million in revenue, they had 1,000 employees, each company. Most of those,
a lot of touching, right? You got to touch.
It is a lot of touching. And so most of those FTEs, people, are in the production area. They're not necessarily sales or administrative, but in production, processing product.
Now, is one of your challenges is getting the hospitals on board?
It is indeed. And this is a keen opportunity for us to reach out and say how much we would appreciate the support of the local Atlanta healthcare providers, who today, most of which discard their date-expired devices, those that maybe aren't picked up by MedShare locally, and I'll let AB speak to that. But yes, there are a few that have embraced this value proposition and have recently engaged contractually with J&J or Stryker to provide this total comprehensive reprocessing solution. Today, we're in phase one. We just repackage, if you will, date-expired devices.
Right.
What J&J and Stryker, who bought Ascent and SteroMed, do, they do the soiled side too. The soiled side is, after a surgical procedure.
Right.
And so they disassemble, clean, and reassemble back to the OEM spec. and they're required to have what's called a 510K by the FDA in order to do that.
So they're taking all of the stuff?
Yes.
Not just the non-used stuff?
Correct.
So that's easier for the hospital, right? Because now it's they're just giving them one big pile of stuff.
Correct. They have a turnkey solution, both the clean and the soiled,
right,
when they have these relationships.
Now, do they pay the hospital to take it off their hands? So is this a revenue generator for the hospital, or is this just like a hassle saver for the hospital?
It's a hassle saver for the hospital. Reduces their waste, obviously, that they pay to have hauled away. Their economic benefit for the hospital is buying back what they've sent in after it's been reprocessed. On the soiled side, there's a 50% discount.
Uh-huh.
So if you pay $1,000 for a device, you knew you'd get it back at half the price, $500. So the value proposition has a double benefit, economic and environmental.
And I think it's important to point out, and you did mention it, but I just want to say it one more time, is that in that process of dealing with those soiled items, those items have to be brought back to the original manufacturer's specs.
Right.
There's no double standard.
Right.
And the FDA really does inspect that process very, very closely to make sure that the consumer is not getting second
right. But, if it's so labor-intensive just to take the never-used stuff, it must be super labor-intensive to get the soiled stuff.
Well, it is. It is, but I think Kurt would give you more detail on this. On the 510Ks, you really are especially focusing on a small number of items.
Uh-huh.
Unlike the MedShares and the nonprofits take a
lots of
variety.
Lots of different things, right.
The 510Ks really are focused
just on a handful of...
That's right, a handful, high
of value. High-end. So it's worth the trouble.
It is.
There's about 20 categories of devices, and these are class 2 devices. You were mentioning your implantable orthopedic device previously. That would be a class 3 device that are not reprocessable.
I see.
So the 510Ks are applied to class 2 soil product.
Now, do you envision going down that path and working with soil product at some point in your growth?
We definitely do. This is just phase one.
Phase two
is to secure the 510Ks. There's about 20 that we need to have a level playing field to J&J and Stryker, and that's a few years down the road.
Now, when you're going to the hospital, what is that conversation like? And you're explaining this value proposition. And so you know that there's a solution out there that's more robust because they do the soiled as well as the new. And you're explaining to them that they should work with you guys and just do the new stuff through you.
True, and it is a bit of a challenge, except if you're working with, let's say in town, the Emory's of the world that don't embrace this value proposition, do not buy reprocessed devices.
Right, so then your solution, it makes sense.
It's a lower barrier of entry for us to have that conversation because, again, it's just talking about date-expired devices, devices never open, never used, brand new for all intents and purposes.
How do you make it easy for them to use your service?
Well, we partner with organizations like MedShare who already have the
collection. Oh, so MedShare already has collection in place, so you're just kind of putting another one next to that theirs or
same one, a separate one that's next to theirs. And then if they're not present, if an MSRO is not present in a hospital, then we will have a dedicated collection container.
And let me explain what the MSRO is, Medical Surplus Recovery Organization. That's that's what we call that industry that the MedShare is part of. And I need to be careful here to stress that MedShare has worked with us on some early product, but we do not have an ongoing relationship with them on a daily basis.
They're separate entities.
That's right. There are other MSROs around the country that we do have agreements with, and they're sending products, such as in Cleveland. There's one in Pittsburgh that's working with us, and now there's one in Charlotte that has signed on with us. So growing the relationships with the MSROs is an ongoing evolutionary process.
You guys both must sleep really well at night. I mean, this has to be very rewarding work. I'm sure it's profitable, and I'm sure you figured out that piece of it as well, or you're working on it. But just knowing what you're doing for folks, I mean, you're providing a great service for the hospitals, and you're serving needs on every corner of the planet. That's got to feel good, man.
It does. It's a virtual circle, and it's very rewarding because it does give back to the industry.
Yeah.
That's been great for our careers.
So do you guys need or want funding to help you pull this off and get into phase two, or is AB's pockets deep enough to make it through, or what?
Well, you were talking about the pre-pitch, the pre-pitch nerves. I had those a bit here before we got started, but we've made multiple pitches for funding that have met with tremendous success. We were actually oversubscribed.
Oh, wow.
And so that piece is in place, and we have all the other pieces now from the collection side to the revenue side. We have a fully functioning facility over in Tucker by Stone Mountain. We have today about a half dozen FTEs, and we plan to double that rapidly. And again, we just reach out for the support of the local healthcare providers that today are paying to have these devices thrown away to the landfill that we would love to work with and to extend the useful life. And we have plenty of demand domestically and internationally. We are already generating revenue in both the domestic and international markets. There's greater demand than there is supply, and that's a great place to be in any business.
So now you're out there. You're aspiring to have the soiled at some point. Do you have a timeline on that? 3 years, 5 years, tomorrow?
We can give you two answers. Kurt's is always tomorrow, and mine's always 18 months, 24
months.
That's
the going rate now.
Well, these 510Ks take anywhere from 6 to 18 months to clear the FDA.
Wow.
And they, on average, cost about $150,000. And then you need about $1 million worth of FF&E, furniture, fixtures, and equipment in your facility to do all the testing.
A lot of acronyms in this business. Did you notice that?
Do you have a clean room?
We don't describe it as a clean room.
Right.
It is a condition room. It's a white room. It's a climate-controlled environment.
So you have the people in the outfits with the...
We have them in their lab coats and booties and a cap. And
right. So if I want to film one of those horror movies with the virus containment, I can use that facility. It looks like that.
That's a way to get some additional revenue. So who exactly in the hospital system is the person that you need to have this kind of conversation with, by title or role?
Materials management, VP of supply chain, the people that procure all these devices.
And then do you have a target list of what hospitals you think are most likely to be open to this conversation?
Well, back to your earlier question about those that are reprocessing today probably wouldn't work with us because they already have a turnkey total solution from Ascent or Sterilmed. Yes, so we do have hospitals that are not involved in this value proposition that we are reaching out to and working with just on the date-expired product.
And so let's say you absolutely knock their socks off in an afternoon conversation like this on a Tuesday. How quickly can you get a program up and running and implemented for them? What does that ramp up look like?
It's not that involved to get a collection container deployed. And when it's filled up, then they send it in. We replace the collection container. And when we receive the product, we bring it into our inventory after it's been inspected. And then we do the packaging, the relabeling, sterilization. That turnaround time from the time we receive the product in with a full collection container is about 30 to 45 days.
Now, is there a way for them to test this to see if it's going to work or not?
Yeah, can they dip their toe a little bit?
Or they got to go all in?
Totally. I mean, we'll be happy to work with just a select few devices initially and then prove that we can perform and meet their requirements and then expand beyond.
From there. Sure. Now, what's that low-hanging fruit? What are the devices that are the easy ones to kind of test the waters with?
The three specialties have a plethora of product. That's orthopedic, laparoscopic, cardiovascular. And that's where they're going to get the biggest return on their time investment in collecting the devices that they're sending in. So those three specialties are really the sweet spot.
And so, AB, you're going to continue to cultivate these relationships, deepen these relationships with the MedShare community and other MSROs?
MSROs, you got it. Yep.
See, I've been paying attention.
Medical surplus recovery organizations. I am, and one of the things that we haven't talked about is a little bit on the benefit side for the MSROs. For example, one of the ones that we're working with up in the Carolinas, we could offer them some revenue for the product that they are shipping to us, but they chose not to take revenue, believe it or not.
Wow.
And I understand the reason behind that, because as a nonprofit, you really are governed very closely in terms of what product you can monetize and so forth and how much you do. And they chose not to take any money for the product. What they wanted, though, was for us to reprocess some items that they use in their work in Central America. Support. They support some very intensive.
And you're happy to do that, right?
Absolutely. So barter. It's a bartering system. Right. And so that we said to them, okay, you keep the records, you tell us the value of the product that you're giving us, and you tell us the value of the product you want back, and we'll just do the bartering.
Wow.
So it's really a beautiful relationship. One other organization up in Pittsburgh, in a similar fashion, sent us 800 cartery pencils.
Okay.
They had donated overseas some electrical surgical units, and these pencils are needed to perform the cauterization. And they wanted us to repouch those and re-sterilize them, give them a new date, extend the life, and send them back to them. But they also take some revenue from us.
Uh-huh.
So that's a system where it's a mixture of a cash.
And you're flexible, right? You don't care.
Listen, we're very flexible. So, you know, there's every MSRO kind of has a different niche of what they would like out of the relationship.
And then it's nice to be nimble enough to be able to accommodate whatever their needs are.
Absolutely.
As opposed to some of these larger conglomerates probably aren't as nimble as you and flexible.
Well, that's exactly right. I think you could tell a story of a Salt Lake City operation that tried to work with the larger players, and they didn't show that flexibility.
The larger players are in this market to generate billions of dollars in revenue.
Right.
It's a $4 billion market. Again, it's only 10% penetrated, projected to triple in revenue in the next few years. And they have their relationships with the end users on a direct basis. They have, you're talking about billion-dollar corporations
right.
that have thousands of employees, hundreds of sales reps nationally. They don't really need another layer or middleman to get product from the end user. So this is where a small startup, privately held company that is nimble, our goal is to grow to be a $100 million company. We won't show up on their radar screen, our competitor's radar screen, we don't believe, which is a beautiful thing. But we will reach out and work with the end user and meet their unique requirements and be flexible, be accommodating, establish a reciprocating relationship.
What a testament to a couple of folks really wanting to do some genuine work and serve people. And What a testimony for the kind of work that like the Metro Atlanta Chamber is doing and Lynn Hood is doing to get people like you connected.
Connecting the right
That's
people.
That's outstanding.
And then, breathing life and helping grow your business, giving your career a little bit of a pivot here, but still staying within the lines of what you've been doing over the years. I mean, that's wonderful.
People need to hear this story, absolutely. And I wonder, I mean, it wouldn't be terribly inappropriate when you have these conversations with the materials management people. Maybe their PR person should be in the room, too. Because, I don't think there's anything unclean at all about leveraging the fact that, these hospitals are helping folks.
Right. No, that's absolutely
That's a great
true.
PR message, right? Yeah.
I know on the MSRO side, there is a good relationship with the media and the PR departments in the hospitals
right.
that work with MSROs because most of them are nonprofit hospitals.
Right.
And so in order to maintain their nonprofit status, they have to show every year that they're giving back to the community.
Right, and what a wonderful way to give back.
It has a big, strong environmental impact.
Right.
I know the MSROs measure cubic feet that are diverted from landfills as a way of measuring. One measurement of their work.
Right.
I'd love to have these guys back sometime with an MSRO, a representative from an MSRO, and talk about this whole thing from their
360 view of how the whole operation works.
You guys be up for that sometime?
That'd be great. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And to your point a second ago, but the whole connectivity of how AnuMed has evolved. Yes, we met Lynn at the Health IT Summit a couple of years ago, but it was Molly Taylor down at MAC and David Hartnett at MAC.
That was mostly Lynn, though.
Absolutely. She's sitting right beside me, nudging me. But they invited me to attend the Health IT Summit. They've been very supportive of our companies. I'm sure they are with other organizations that want to launch in Atlanta. And so we're grateful to them and all their support, and we continue to work very closely with MAC and with the Economic Development Authority out in DeKalb, where we're located. So it's just been a great evolution and just great people contributing to our company and helping us get to this point.
Good stuff. So if somebody wants to learn more, website for you guys?
It's www.anewmed.com.
And that's AnewMed.com.
Correct.
All right. Well, thank you both for being part of the show.
Thank you for having us.
This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Disruptive Healthcare.